This is a Fan 590 podcast. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
It is Wednesday, June the 30th, 2010. Bob McCown, John Shannon, the radio program in our studios here in Toronto on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation on the air. A little bit later. For those of you just joining us on the network, we talked to Ticats President Scott Mitchell a few moments ago and tried to get his take on the story of Daryl Cates, the owner of the Edmonton Oilers, going into Hamilton yesterday, meeting with some council people about taking over operations of both the arena and the, well, proposed football stadium, which will be a stadium.
Pan Am Stadium.
Pan Am Stadium at first. And Mitchell doesn't seem to really have much of an idea of what the hell's going on, which is to say the Ticats don't seem to be in the loop on this one. We're going to try and get the Oilers' perspective. Why are they doing this? Pat LaForge, the present CEO of the Oilers, will join us in a few minutes. Also a story that some of you may be familiar with. John Gardner, the president of the Greater Toronto Hockey League, will join us. And that's the minor hockey association for the city of for Metro
Largest
Toronto.
Minor hockey association in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, thousands and thousands of kids playing it. A story emerged this week of two sets of parents of two kids who went out to tryouts for a team and were cut by that team. And those parents are now suing the GTHL for, I think, $25,000 each. Hard to believe, but true. So we're going to try and get the perspective of Mr. Gardner on that. So that's coming up. Yesterday, we kind of ran out of time, and it was our fault, and we didn't get a chance to get to Mark Cohan to talk about a big story yesterday, and that is the agreement between the CFL and the CFL Players Association that, among other things, encompasses a drug testing program, and we're pleased that the commissioner of the Canadian Football League has agreed to join us today. Here's Mark Cohan. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good. Good to be back.
Thank you very much. And we apologize for last night. We didn't want to give you the short shift, so we have you back here in prime time. So
you got me now.
In reading the accounts of that some had of yesterday's announcement, it seemed clear that the one area where there seemed to be concern, and almost across the board concern, was not the drug testing program, which I think everybody applauds, but the level of punishment that would accrue if, in fact, somebody tests positive. Do you want to respond in general terms to that, and then we can get into it in more specifics?
Sure. You know, first of all, we're proud of the policy. You know, I think it's a policy that really does affect and focus on the integrity of performance on the field. And that's where we're focused on performance-enhancing drugs. As far as mitting out, penalties. What we talked about with the experts, with the Canadian Center for Ethics in Sports, was education first. The minute, you know, there's a first penalty, they go right into mandatory testing, you know, up to 8 times in 2 years. And then after that, it really starts to get heavy. You get a 3-game suspension, you get a year, and then you're banned for life, and you get no chance of reinstatement. Other leagues have a chance of reinstatement. We don't allow that. So, you know, we're proud of it. The other thing to think about in our league, we don't have guaranteed contracts in our league either. So there is a potential, if there is a problem, that a team can make a decision on top of any penalties that we mit out.
So if a player tests positive,
mm-hmm.
there is nothing to prohibit the individual team from cutting that player.
No, yeah, exactly.
So there's no protection policy there.
In terms of, you know, there's no guaranteed contracts in our
right.
league. So a team can make a decision, whatever decision they want. But the fact of the matter is the policy is in place to help players who might have trouble. You know, this is not a witch hunt. We don't think there's a problem in our league. We've seen challenges that the CIS have, so we're helping the CIS by working with the Canadian Center for Sports Ethics to test 80 players in the CIS every year who we identify as prospects who are going to come to our evaluation camp and also be in our draft. So we think that's a big step forward to help CIS And the good parts of our policy, the solid parts of our policy is, you know, we're testing for human growth. We're doing in-season and out-of-season. We have a WADA independent facility that is, you know, doing the independent testing. So there's a lot of teeth in this plan, and we're proud of it.
The out-of-season testing, Mark, fascinates you when you consider, you know, a great many of the athletes don't live in Canada in the off-season.
We've talked about that with CCES, and you know it's gonna be a little bit more work, but you know we're up for it.
And the other part of it is, there every part of professional sports appears to have a true appeal process. How does an appeal process work in the drug testing?
There is an appeal process. Richard McLaren is the arbitrator who can go to an independent arbitrator to appeal that process, and he will hear them. If there are any incremental costs in that, that does fall on the player to pick up those costs. So, if a player is going to go and try and arbitrate this, mm-hmm. He has to really think seriously about it.
I don't know whether you'll tell me, but my initial reaction when I saw the policy was that the PA effectively created what I would consider, I know you don't think it is, but what I would consider to be a rather lenient policy, at least in the beginning, with no suspension off the top. Do you want to comment on the suggestion that it was the PA that, in the course of negotiation, steered this thing in this direction?
No, absolutely not. I think we Stu Laird and Ed Molstad and the leadership of the PA have been working on this concept for several years. You know, they had to work with their players. But if you saw many of the players being interviewed yesterday across our league, unanimously, they're all coming out and saying, listen, I don't want a guy lining up against me who might have an unfair advantage because he's taking performance-enhancing drugs. And I think we all said, let's educate first. Let's, help them out. And then go from there. But once we turn it up, it becomes significant penalties. And I think, I think this is a major step forward. The other thing with this policy, just like our CBA, you know, we're working over the next 4 years. These policies can evolve and change. And, you know, if some elements aren't working, then we could work with the PA to try and change those.
You said earlier that you don't believe you have a serious problem in your league. I'm intrigued by that statement, given that that's what we've heard from every league. And we've discovered, baseball said they didn't have a problem. And guess what? They had a big problem. The NFL said it didn't have a problem. Well, they have a big problem. What's the basis for that? Because I think, quite frankly, the football culture is such that therein is the biggest problem with performance-enhancing drugs is in the football culture, that it emanates from high school through college and into professional sport. And quite frankly, I think you've got a significant number of guys who have taken performance-enhancing drugs. I have no evidence to prove that, but all paths suggest there's a problem. Whether you're going to catch them or not, I don't know. So what's your basis for saying you don't think you have a problem?
Well, you know, I think what I think is that, you know, I have no evidence either. I can't speculate on it. But what I do know is that the leadership on both sides of the table decided it's time for us to have a policy. As you know, over many years, the league was being criticized for not having a policy in place. The new collective bargaining agreement, the new business model that we created in the league by allowing us, the league, to invest as opposed to having a cap fixed to revenue sharing, allows us to invest in these type of things. And I think that improves the professionalism of the league.
Mark, we had Jim Barker on the show on Tuesday, and he was telling us how inferior the quarterback helmet headset system was working. Has the league done anything to improve it in the short term?
Sorry, he was saying what? I couldn't hear you.
How bad the new headset system has been. And in fact, they've gone back to using hand signals.
I had not heard that, and I'll talk to my football guy. Yeah. But, it hadn't crossed my desk on that. And obviously, if there's challenges with it, we'll fix it. We do that. You know, when the command center came out, if there are any challenges in that, we fix it. And, you know, if there are some challenges, the teams say they're having problems with it, we'll fix it.
Yeah, I was sort of puzzled thus because it's hard to understand in this day of an age of technology being what it is that a signal that travels about 30 yards would be problematic.
Yeah.
Really.
And I'm not suggesting that you would know. It's something that I'm sure would be on Tom's desk, but it just appeared he was so forthright with the comment as it's awful. We don't like it. We're using hand signals.
Well, you know, I'll make sure our guys talk to Jim. But, you know, obviously, you know, one of the things we did is an investment. You know, this new agreement is allowing us to make investments. You know, we did the command center last year, which sped up the game by 2 or 3 minutes. This is one investment. And we'll obviously go to the supplier if we're not happy with it.
One of the other pieces of news earlier this week, Ottawa City Council voting in favor of the Lansdowne redevelopment plan by a vote of 15-9. What does that mean now?
No, it's a major step forward for this league. It means that the political process in getting us back into Ottawa has come to, you know, I believe its conclusion. Now the development process gets in place where you get the permits, you line up your environmental assessments, you go to OMB, you get all the plans in place. And what we hope for is to break ground by May or June of next year. That would mean 2 years to rebuild the stadium and have a team back in the league by 2013.
Have you got a deal with that with the group in Ottawa for an expansion franchise or contingent deal or anything?
Yeah, I mean, basically, there are terms that they have to meet, and obviously, if they want to go forward with the project, they have to meet those terms. Part of it is a payment. Obviously, it's a confidential agreement, but there are some terms they have to meet, and we have no reason to believe that they won't meet those terms. And it is a great group of owners that we've assembled there, so we're confident that these guys are city builders. And that's exactly what this project is, and a new team there is going to be part of that city building.
What's the expansion fee?
It's $7 million. We did when we first announced that a few years ago. We did reveal that, but you know, I think it's a good number for the league, and you know, I think they got in early. I probably would have negotiated a little harder if we did it today.
Is it $7 million up front?
Yeah, I mean, there's payment terms, but yeah, it's basically, you know, they have to obviously meet some criteria, but before the first kick happens, you know, the money has to be paid out.
Now, and you understand why I'm asking, because, you know, I've had lengthy experience with this league, and I do remember the days of the expansion into the United States. Oh. I do remember,
Fred Smith.
I do remember an announcement, for Las Vegas, where they held up a giant, one of those giant cardboard checks. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the only check that was forthcoming. You know, they announced an expansion fee, and the only thing they got was the big cardboard one.
Yeah, well, I think 2010 is much different than, I think, 1995. You know, this league has come a long way. 14 million people watching the Grey Cup last year, close to $1 billion in stadium projects going on across the league. You know, we're in a different place today.
Hey, actually, you talk about that. The Empire Field in Vancouver, I grew up going to Empire Stadium and loved it, even though there was only 12,000 seats between the goal lines. But Empire Field seems to be a huge hit in Vancouver, even in the preseason. But it tells me that portable stadiums are easily built and moved to Moncton, New Brunswick as well.
We've been talking about that for a couple of years now.
Does this allow you to think of expansion when you can see portable stadiums built for $35 million?
I think that only cost $14 or $15 million to put up. But you know, the fact of the matter is, you can't build a franchise based upon a portable stadium, a temporary stadium. And I think really what you need is a long term investment in that community. And but this gives a great opportunity for our team in BC. I'll be out there in 10 days, and you know, the feedback I've heard from both Dennis Scalzi, the president of the club, and our employees who have gone out there say it's unbelievable. You know, in thinking about expansion, Ottawa's first. We got the game in Moncton on September 26th that sold out in 32 hours. Let's see where it can go from there. You know, that stadium in Moncton is only 10,000 seats. We added another 11 or 12. But maybe with some new technologies, if we ever got to a point where you can expand that stadium, maybe the cost won't be as high. And I think that that is stuff that we'll look at as we go down, you know, several years from now and see how successful we are there.
Your dilemma in Vancouver, Mark, will be when they start to say, we want to play there full-time and we don't want to go back to the $450 million BC place.
Well, you know, as long as they're opening the roof, it gives a better football experience. And, you know, hopefully that's what the fans will say.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, if they open the roof only when it doesn't rain, though, you may have a problem because you may never see it open. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you in the last couple of minutes here to comment on the situation that's apparently ongoing in Hamilton. We had Scott Mitchell on to talk about it. He seems puzzled by it all. Pat LaForge is hopefully going to clarify things. But it does sort of indirectly relate to the Canadian Football League and specifically to Bob Young and the Tiger Cats, that being the concept of, you know, the Edmonton Oilers ownership management, Mr. Cates, purchasing proposing to operate both the arena and the upcoming Pan Am Game / Hamilton Tiger Cats Stadium down the road. We're going to find out where that's at. But what do you know of this, and are you concerned?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to hear Scott during his interview, but I think really what the team is focusing on and what we're focusing on is this date that is really coming up next week, where the mediator is coming out with his report, and a decision has to be made in short order. I think the things that we've been reading about the initiative, the potential initiative with the Cates Group, it would be later on at the end of this summer. So hopefully the location and the issue around where the stadium is going to go gets resolved a lot earlier than this. And I think the other piece of this is you can't dislocate the two, is that it's not just about the location of the stadium, it's about who's managing that stadium as well. You look at the revenue opportunities for the Ticats and making sure that, you know, they're a solid tenant that can get revenue streams from whether that's parking or concessions or box seat sales. You know, that all goes into it. So I think, you know, this issue is going to have to be addressed before that comes into play.
Sure, but bluntly, wouldn't you rather see Mr. Young, or if not he and his group, at least allow him to get together a group to manage it? Isn't that in the best interest of the Tiger Cats?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that should be part of the discussion with the city and as part of the Pan Am discussions.
Well, therefore, you must have some concerns about the Cates Group kind of sticking their nose in this.
Yeah, and I think my understanding from the Cates Group is that, you know, they're looking at a whole bunch of projects across Canada. He's building beyond just his company Rexall Sports. What he's trying to build is a sports business that is in a variety of other municipalities. You know, this is talking about managing the arena. I believe it's talking about managing the convention center and some other assets within that city.
Right.
The fact that the stadium sort of came up in discussion, I don't think, you know, they've done any due diligence or deep dive into that location. I'm sure when Pat's on the air and you drill down with Pat, I doubt they've done any deep dives to understand that location or any thorough analysis of the West Harbor.
Well, stay tuned. We're going to try and find out in just a couple seconds.
I will listen.
Thank you, Mr. Cohan.
Thanks, guys.
Mark Cohan, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League.
Get his headset fixed. Get his headsets fixed.
Well, he said he's going to get on it. He'll be on it like that. Probably on the phone right now.
I'm concerned he hadn't heard about it.
Maybe his headset didn't work.
Exactly.
Back with more Primetime Continues on The Fan Radio Network and Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on The Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
When we come back, what were the Edmonton Oilers brass doing in Hamilton, and what is their objective? Pat LaForge, the president and CEO of the Oilers, will join us. Also, GTHL president John Gardner when Primetime Sports continues.
Primetime Sports is on The Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Bottom of the hour, the radio program continues. Coast to coast, Bob McCowan, John Shannon in our Toronto studios. Coming up, a couple of young players, I don't remember exactly how old, we'll get to it in a bit, are cut from a hockey team.
Midget
hockey team.
Yeah.
You know, it's tryouts, as you have all the time, and they don't make the team. These kids don't make the team, and the parents of these two kids file lawsuits against the GTHL, the Greater Toronto Hockey League. Just when you think you've heard it all when it comes to minor hockey and how absurd parents can be, you hear this. We'll talk to the president of the GTHL, John Gardner, about it in just a few minutes. But first, lots of questions and no answers yet. What possessed the ownership and management of the Edmonton Oilers to venture into Hamilton yesterday to, it seems, pursue some kind of a deal relating to Copps Coliseum and the proposed new football stadium, stadium for the Pan Am Games, that would ultimately become the Hamilton Tiger Cats stadium. And Well, in essence, what exactly is going on? What was the agenda? Joining us to talk about it is the president and CEO of the Oilers, Patrick LaForge, is with us. Mr. LaForge.
Hi. Hey, how are you, gentlemen?
Good. So this was, it obviously raised a Spockian eyebrow down here when we found out that you, Daryl Cates, and I don't know who else, were in Hamilton yesterday to at least address the possibility, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong in assessing this, of operating these two sporting facilities in or around Hamilton. Give us the history, the background of this, if you will.
Sure. And, one thing, Daryl wasn't with me. I was there with Ted Tanner, who is executive vice president of AEG, and with a fellow from Deloitte, and the vice president of Cates Group, Paul Marcaccio.
So okay, there's the group.
That's the group. And I thought there were a lot of answers. Certainly there were a lot of speculated answers.
There's always that, Pat. There's always speculated answers.
I met with tons of media and gave them clear answers. Is this about the Oilers? No. Is this about us moving an NHL team in any sort? No. We have an NHL team. It's in Edmonton. And we expect the Edmonton Oilers to stay in Edmonton forever. So it's not about that. But it is about our strategy to grow our business in sports and entertainment. Many people have done. It shouldn't be a shock. Although we are a small player, many companies and organizations, the Flyers out of their organization, the Kings out of their organization have obviously generated a group called AEG, the Leafs all over, grown, and the Buffalo Sabres are doing a real estate development on the waterfront. And the idea is that we have some skills in sports and entertainment, facilities management. Hamilton's an exciting place in southern Ontario. They're doing some interesting things, and they have some facilities there, and current and future. So Cops Coliseum, the convention center, Hamilton Place, which is a small theater, an entertainment theater, some parking associated with those facilities, and then there's something called the proposed new Pan Am Sports Stadium in West Harbor. And we went to council at the advice of administration yesterday to ask them to give us a period of grace, standstill, if you will, for us to work with administration to come up with an understanding by which we might move forward to the liking of the city and ourselves. And administration should bring back that piece of work to council for their approval on or before September 1.
All right. We did a little homework yesterday and discovered that as of today, there are a grand total of 5 events booked for Cops Coliseum between now and the end of September.
Sounds like opportunity, doesn't it?
Well, either it's opportunity or it's foolhardy because, it's not exactly a thriving operation right now. So yeah. I guess the question is, in conjunction with the Anschutz company and AEG, do you think there's a window here? And we should make mention that the Anschutz company operates several properties, arenas.
92 facilities.
Yeah. There you go.
All over the world, by the way.
Right. So, which raises another question, which I'll get to in a second. But what do you, when we see a barren schedule, really, you see opportunity in that?
I think you're answering your own question, Bob.
I guess you are, but...
The time to buy gold is when it's at $100, not when it's at $1,000.
No, I know.
I've done both.
Yeah, I bought at $250.
Done both.
I'm doing okay.
The time to apply your skills, I think it's obvious. You made the case and stated it so well.
Well, but here's part two of that question.
Sure.
Why couldn't the Anschutz company do this on their own? I mean, they certainly have the infrastructure, the leverage, history.
Does that make it better?
Not necessarily. Okay. I'm just wondering what the synergy is between Mr. Cates and the Anschutz Group.
I think it's AEG, if you don't mind. They only have one company name. But I think have a relationship there in Hamilton and in Canada and a number of different places. And we're working together in Edmonton on the development here. A 16-acre parcel, which would include an arena, entertainment centers, hotels, and so forth. And revitalize downtown. We think we've got some good experience there. We think we might be, feeling something similar going on in the Steel City and could offer them something special. And so we approached it that way. And you need a period of time to kind of figure that out and see what works for you. And then both parties got to agree, yeah, that you know, we'll bring it back to council and see if it can get approved.
Patrick, does this go ahead without the stadium?
You know, in my, that's a good question. People have asked me that before. We're taking what's on the table right now, John, as a given, that Pan Am Games will happen in Hamilton, that there will be a stadium, and that it'll be located in West Harbor. We don't have any other thing to go with, and it's not good of us to deal with what-ifs.
Okay.
And so we're just dealing with what's there right now.
Now, how would you describe your relationship with the Tiger Cats then?
Me personally?
Well, I you are the front man, right?
So. Yeah. This is not anti-Tiger Cats. You know, whatever the city decides relative to the Cats, I've said yesterday, we'll deal with it. If it's to our liking and it makes the situation better, and I hope it does, great. If it doesn't, then we'll respond accordingly. I know this. I'm in the business of selling dates and buildings, and you need all the tenants you can find, especially ones that pay their bills. And I think the Ticats are an institution there, and I think we're in our wording and what we're doing, it says the stadium is the future home of the Ticats. Now, that's a little bit presumptuous, but... you know, we're not the anti-cat thing. We're the pro-community, and we need all the customers we can get.
Scott Mitchell, the president of the Ticats, was on with us about an hour ago, and we talked to him about this very subject, and I got the distinct impression, I don't know whether John did, that their noses were a little out of joint about this, given that they feel that they would be the most appropriate people to operate the stadium. Want to respond to that?
You know, that may be a point of view. Scott's left me a message, and I'm to call him back, and I will.
Okay.
I think that we think we're the answer. We think us and AEG makes a very much a world-class presentation in everything. You know, they've got everything from Celine Dion to Justin Bieber and beyond, and they're going to be doing that for a long time. And you know, you can run some buildings on live entertainment and make money, and because people come and they love it and they love the package, and so we think AEG has done this in so many places. They're a very logical partner for us. Now, we're not saying they are our partner. I want to make that clear. Two things I want to make clear. AEG attended as my guest to talk about some things that are going on in urban revitalization projects around the world, one in Berlin, one in London, another one just completing itself in Los Angeles in Watts, known as LA Live, and they show pictures of how it started and where it is. And that was an education purpose only. And two, we don't have a deal. In Hamilton, we had a proposition, and council passed a motion to ask administration to produce a non-binding MOU, bring it back to council before September 1. So I think the doors are open for everybody's idea. And yes, we pushed our way in and said, we've got an idea too, and we'd like to talk to you about it, but, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Here's part of the dilemma I see from the Hamilton Tigerhead perspective, and you correct me if you know something different. But my recollection of the process was that the Pan Am Games would build I think it was a 15,000-seat stadium for their use, expandable for the use of the CFL post facto.
Yeah.
But that the balance of the renovations were going to cost, I can't remember, it was $80 million? Or maybe it was $80 million total for the stadium. Whatever it was, a substantial amount of money. And that Mr. Young was being called upon to at least provide some significant investment in that. I think the city was going to pick up part of the tab, but Mr. Young was going to have to pick up part of the tab. Is Mr. Cates, are you prepared to pay part of the cost of expanding that facility from 15,000 to whatever, 25,000, 30,000 in order for the Tiger Cats to play there?
Well, two things. One, nobody's offered any money other than the province, as far as I know.
Okay.
And nobody, I don't think, has been asked to. One of the good things about these periods of standstill is you get a chance to figure out whether it's a good idea and how much you may or may not make if you ran it. Mm-hmm. It's a business. You say, why are we doing this? For business. It's a business case. And business is, you know, about customer satisfaction to the level that you can make money. And if we can get the facts together and people are going to provide us with the information, then we'll get to a place where we say, hey, this is actually a brilliant idea, and there are other things we can add to it. And for that, maybe we can invest in the further development. Maybe it needs to be 40,000 seats. Who knows?
Well, all I can tell you is, Pat, that from my observation, and just a personal observation, like if it stays at 15,000, if it's not expanded, it's a dog. It's not even a dog. It's a dog with fleas. What do you do with a 15,000-seat outdoor stadium?
Yeah. The thing about these stadiums that I've noticed, and you have as well because you're a student of the games, is that after, you build them for the games, but the real use is the next 35 years.
Well, sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of people. We have Commonwealth Stadium, which is a great facility, but the track is on the inside, and distances you from center field. And the reason why I'm sure Bob Young's group and our group, I know our group, speaking up now is before it's designed, before it's actually put to paper, what happens with the next 35 years? And if that window is somewhat open, then it needs to be the kind of place where you can have, you know, full live sports and entertainment events throughout the wonderful summer months in Southern Ontario.
You know what just kicked into my head? Something you just talked about earlier, and we've talked about on this program for a long time, and that's the BC Lions thing.
The portable stadium.
The portable stadium idea. I mean, with all due respect, I mean, you're building a 15,000-seat of a stadium for a two-week event.
Yeah.
And you're spending tens of millions of dollars on the thing, and then... You literally have to reinvent it.
You need the football club post games because Iverwin, they can't remodel Iverwin anymore.
So. Well, no, but why not build a temporary facility like the P&E?
Because the whole concept the whole concept was to go to Hamilton and build a plan for the Tiger Cats.
Well, but then build the whole thing. Build a 30,000-seat stadium.
I have questions for Pat before you and I argue.
All right, go ahead.
Quickly, Pat.
I like you guys. I like listening.
Yeah. Well, we do that a lot.
Well, because that lets you off the hook, Mr. LaFleur.
Okay, quickly, Pat. Yesterday in council, you guys proposed or put some data forward based on NHL thoughts for Hamilton. So if you're really not in the business of getting an NHL team there, why would you put those statistics out there and as far as polling? Second question is, if I know you're Ticat friendly now, but does this make you MLSE friendly when you're competing with them for concerts in the Golden Horseshoe? So two questions.
This is what I'd say, the answer to your first question is you have to, if you're going to run a facility, and this is research conducted by Deloitte's. You have to know the full gamut from side to side, from concerts, BMX, live rock and roll, the whole thing, and what people's interests might be in it, what they might be willing to spend. Prepare a matrix, if you will, a business case. And you can't go through Ontario without discussing hockey. I mean, how could you not? That would be, would my boss say to me, oh, so you didn't bring up hockey? so we're not in Canada anymore, I don't suppose.
Yeah.
You have to, and anybody that asks that, not you, John, but others that have asked that question, I said, you got to be kidding, right? You have to.
When I ask it too, Pat.
If you're going to have an arena of 18 or 19,000, you can say, if there was a hockey game played there, would you go? Would you pay? How much would you pay? And then, and so on and so forth. So, that's part of it. I'm not in the business of proposing a hockey, but if you're running a building, it does set up how much would you spend to repair a building? How much would you or could you afford to rejuvenate a building or whatever? And that's really why you have to run these things, because it sets up the business case, the business model.
What about MLSE?
They're great friends, and they do a great business. And, there's concert facilities that, I was with the big brewery when we opened Molson Place down at Harborfront and Molson Amphitheater. And, it was controversial. It was this, it was that, and what I've seen, it's just open and full every night, and still remains so as being run by the House of Blues. And I think, there's research that says people who live in Hamilton would like to go to live entertainment in Hamilton, and so would Oakvillians, and so would Etobicokeans, and, so would Burlingtonians, and so there's a business case that says, I think this might be part of the solution for the south side of the lake. And but we haven't got all the details, so we can't make our case just yet. So to ourselves, we need to convince ourselves that this makes sense. All we asked for yesterday was, we think it is, but if you were interested in us pursuing this any further, we'd like to ask you to give us a couple of weeks to figure out whether it really is or not.
Well, we'll obviously watch with great interest. Yeah. I mean, this is sort of the tipping point, the starting point. We wanted to talk to you about it, but we'll see where it goes, because there's going to be some questions here.
I think so, and hopefully they're exciting and dynamic answers. Hamilton's a place that certainly has accepted the idea of revitalization, and they've prepared a lot of that around the Pan Am development with LRT available going there. And they've got some land set aside for future development. And, the city of Hamilton has done a lot of good work already, and the mayor is a very bright guy. And I found council yesterday, and I'm not sucking up to them. They have had a vision, and they're tired of companies driving by.
You're sucking up.
That's exactly what he's doing.
Well, gee whiz, Pat.
You should see what I said to them about the Fan 590. All right, you two.
All right, thanks a lot.
Have a nice long
weekend. Yeah, have a nice long weekend.
Hockey players' Christmas tomorrow.
Yeah. How much your team spending?
Oh, we'll be less than cap, John. I don't think you'd be surprised about that.
No, I know.
Yeah, it'd be 58.5. Pat LaForge, the president CEO of the Oilers, will come back with John Gardner when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
So here's the story. Two sets of parents are suing the Greater Toronto Hockey League, one of its clubs, and four coaches for $25,000 each because their kids, two of their kids, were cut by a midget junior A team during tryouts in April. John Gardner, it's hard to say it without laughing or being...
My parents would have made lawyers rich.
You have got to be kidding. Here's the president of the GTHL, John Gardner. John, it's good to talk to you. I wish it was under better circumstances. I mean,
well, that's a great way to start the summer.
Yeah. Has this ever happened before?
Not to my knowledge. It's a unique situation.
Are there any mitigating factors here, or is this, the kind of thing that happens every year with thousands and thousands of kids across this country and in junior hockey around the world, or minor hockey around the world? There are tryouts. Some kids make the team, some kids don't. Is this any different?
I don't see it as any different. I mean, you have 17 or 18 kids on the on a team, and if you have 40 or 60 trying out, obviously there's going to be some disappointed kids, but they learn to move on to another team. There's lots of other teams in the same age group.
Now, John, as a former hockey parent myself, I've been through this, whether it be through AA or AAA, AAA, or House League.
Mm-hmm.
And what invariably happens is there's always those backroom accusations that the tryouts that occur in the spring are just fundraisers, and that teams are already chosen, the 17 players are picked, and it's the way to take 40 players or 60 players out there at $10 a head, and you pay for ice and you get another $300 or $400 in the pocket for the team. And you know, over the years that has happened.
It certainly has, but I think when you're paying $300 or $400 for practice ice today, I don't think you're going to be making very much money. The idea is to cover the cost.
But unfortunately, it's more than the $300 or $400 that these guys are making. That becomes the bigger issue. So the tryouts aren't even necessary. That's my point. And so why have the tryouts?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. But I mean, we don't have to worry about that next year. But I'll tell you, the one thing is here that a coach has if he's been coaching in the previous year or he knows the team, he may want to keep 10 of his players. So he's only looking for 7 or 8 more.
I don't have an issue with keeping 10 and having spots for 7. The problem is that you keep 17.
Well, you need 15 according to the league regulations.
Okay. Well, keeping 15 then.
Yeah.
So, what I'm saying is that the team has already been picked before the tryout occurs.
Well,
happened.
It may be. I mean, coaches are only human. They watch games to see who the good players are and who they might like to have on their team the following year. But we've taken care of that situation for next year. We haven't got much notice on it, but 2 weeks ago at our annual general meeting, we're the only league in Canada that is going to make players free agents at the end of every season. No more releases, no more permissions to skate.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I assume you've talked to counsel, and I assume you will contest this action?
Actually, I don't have to talk to counsel, because Hockey Canada covers it with their insurance plan, so they're taking care of it for us.
Oh, interesting. Well, have you talked to Bob Nicholson about it?
No, I haven't. I'd be embarrassed.
John, good of you to take time for us tonight, although brief. At least we got a kind of a sense from you as to what's going on, and I mean, we're shaking our heads over it. I'm sure you are, too.
Well, you know, you're sitting back. You take time. You want to do positive things. We've done one already, as I just explained to you.
Yeah.
Right now, we're working on the basis of trying to get a TV outlet to produce a hockey show for kids for an hour every week. And
quick, John.
Give kids attention.
Thank you. John Gardner, the president of the GTHL, will keep you posted. Back in a minute on Primetime.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
For those of you across the country who listen to this program live, this apparently will be the last time I will be signing off at this time.
No.
When I come back?
At this time.
At this time.
Yeah, but you make it sound like you're leaving.
Why, you know something I don't know?
I know nothing. I know nothing.
With what's been going on around
here? I'm saying, you make it sound like you're leaving.
Well, I'm leaving. I'm going on vacation, but
okay.
I mean, am I coming back?
Yes, you're coming back on the 19th of July.
Well, and for those who take this program live, when I come back, it'll be on 3 to 6 Eastern time.
Okay.
Now, many of the stations tape delay it, so it won't matter to them.
Right.
It'll be 6 of one, half dozen of the other.
But people in Ontario.
Be 3 to 6, not 4 to 7.
There you go. Free agent frenzy tomorrow, Bob.
Yippee.
Oh, I tell you what. Oh, they're going to be millionaires made tomorrow. Better than winning the lottery.
The guys who'll be millionaires are already millionaires. Oh. Have a nice weekend.